Welcome to the Daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
Believe that in Texas, a ROTC student who's in school, he wore a T-shirt with the American flag on it, and he got punished, that the leadership was going to punish him because he was wearing the American flag in Texas, by the way. If you haven't been to Texas, I mean, they have the Texas flag and the American flag. I mean, what's happening to our country? Is our liberty under assault? Let's go to Texas right now and watch this from Fox Reports in Texas.
A student was punished for wearing an American flag T-shirt to school. Here's the shirt that an administrator at Siegelville High School determined violated the dress code.
The boy was facing in-school suspension on his record, but his mom apparently knew more about the dress code than that educator. Fox 4's Deanna Zoga is at Siegelville High School tonight with a story that you will see only on Fox 4. Deanna.
Heather and Clarice's family got on Facebook to spread the word after a 16-year-old had to spend the day in-school suspension. His mom wanted to know how an American flag T-shirt would have violated district policy, and just late today learned it really shouldn't have.
Outside, getting ready.
Shelly Good says her son Jagger does his best to follow the rules. A junior at Siegelville High School, he's passionate about ROTC, hoping to earn a scholarship through the program.
He wants to go to the military. He wants to help people, and any bad marks doesn't look good.
But Monday.
This is the outer shirt that he was wearing.
Shelly says an administrator asked Jagger to lift his hoodie.
Underneath that shirt, he was wearing this shirt.
And when he did, he was sent to ISS. Siegelville High School does not require uniforms, just that students wear solid color shirts. The only exceptions are made for school and college logos or shirts supporting the military.
Why doesn't that count?
I have no idea. I would like that answer.
Shelly, who works the night shift at a hospital, lost sleep driving to school, only to have the assistant principal stand by the punishment.
If he was breaking the rules, he would be punished, and he would have to honor whatever they give him, but he wasn't, and I have to stand by him for that.
So Shelly requested an explanation in writing while we brought the question to the district.
Hi, Mr. Jones, how are you?
And while we were with her, Shelly received a call from the principal, who apologized for all the trouble and confirmed that, yes, the American flag can be worn in school.
The fact that acknowledging it is huge, and the fact that they're willing to stand by and see mistakes and grow from them, that means a lot.
Shelly says that her son had some after-school activities today and wasn't too keen on being on the news. Now, this school is in the Dallas Independent School District. It confirms that American flags can be worn and displayed on clothing. The principal said that he was off campus on Monday. He called this a misunderstanding. He also explained to Shelly that ISS time that her son had to spend yesterday would not have gone on his record anyway for something like a dress code violation. Guys, back to you.
All right. Deanna Zoga live tonight. Thank you.
This is so important. Think about it. We are America, the United States of America. You know, we used to stand in our classes and before the ball games, and we gather together, that we hold our hands over our heart. We pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America for the liberty for which it stands. I mean, think about it. In a school that we're letting our children go to, that to teach our children about education, and one way you have to be educated is about our country. And the flag is some sort of offensive thing, and it took all of that to go through, you know, to be able to discover it's not wrong to wear the American flag, a T-shirt with the American flag on it. We have to pay attention. We have to become alert about what's going on. The question is, and Prager does a real good job of explaining this, Prager University, you know, why are we losing our liberties? As a matter of fact, take a look now.
How did the framers of the Constitution of the United States seek to preserve liberty and prevent tyranny? Pretty basic question. Here's the answer I usually get from my students. Well, Professor, to protect the individual and minorities against the tyranny of the majority, they added the Bill of Rights, and they gave the power to enforce those rights to the Supreme Court. Are my students correct? the editorial boards of the New York Times or the Washington Post, and many members of the U.S. Congress would say yes. Unfortunately, the answer is wrong. I say unfortunately because it reflects a common misunderstanding of the Constitution. And that misunderstanding has led to a serious erosion of our freedom. Let me explain. Both the Bill of Rights and judicial review, the idea that the courts can decide if a law is constitutional or not, were hotly debated items when the Constitution was being drafted in 1789. The Federalists, the group led by Alexander Hamilton that wanted a national constitution, opposed including a Bill of Rights. They feared it would actually undermine what the Federalists regarded as the main protections against tyranny in the document, the limited nature of the national government itself. The Constitution did not envision a national government of general jurisdiction, meaning a government that could do whatever it wanted, but rather a government of enumerated and delegated powers, a government that had authority over only specific areas of American life. All other powers were to be beyond the scope of the national government and reserved to the states or to the American people themselves. That's why when political necessity forced the Federalists to yield to demands for a Bill of Rights, they took care to add two important amendments, the 9th and 10th. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. These amendments reinforce the idea that the national government couldn't just assume powers it had not been specifically granted by the Constitution. Unfortunately, these amendments have not stymied the expansion of the national authority. The power grab the Federalists feared, the national government taking more and more control over more and more areas of American life, took place. Not immediately, but over time, and especially beginning in the second half of the 20th century. That same time frame has seen a similar concentration of power in the judiciary, especially in the Supreme Court, so that now most Americans think of the Supreme Court as the ultimate arbiter of almost every social and political dispute. The founders never envisioned the court in this role. How has the court fared in playing it? Well, there have been moments of glory, to be sure, such as in the racial desegregation case of Brown against the Board of Education in the 1950s. But it has also handed down decision after decision, from Dred Scott against Sanford in the 1850s, which facilitated the expansion of slavery, to Roe against Wade in the 1970s, which legalized abortion throughout the United States, in which the justices have plainly overstepped the bounds of their authority by creating law from the bench, thereby further expanding their own power and that of the national government. Moreover, the Supreme Court has done little to stop the executive and legislative branches of the national government from unconstitutionally overreaching. Recently, the court found a way, by a bare majority, to uphold an obvious case of constitutional overreach by the national government, the imposition of a law, or individual mandate as it is known, requiring every citizen to purchase health insurance coverage as part of President Obama's signature Affordable Care Act. The government defended this mandate as a legitimate exercise of its expressly delegated power to regulate commerce among the states. The trouble is that the mandate does not regulate commerce at all. Rather, it forces people into commerce on pain of a financial penalty. But why did the issue get to the courts at all? Congress and the president should have recognized and honored the fact that the Constitution simply does not empower the national government to impose a mandate on the people to purchase products, whether health insurance or anything else. We've drifted a long way from the original vision of the founders. The further we've drifted, the more powerful the national government has grown, and the less free Americans have become. Freedom can be taken away, but it can also be given away out of sheer ignorance. If we Americans, we the people, want to get some of that freedom back, we need to read America's founding documents. All the freedom we ever wanted is there. I'm Robert George, professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University for Prager University.
So you think about this. I mean, can you imagine if all of a sudden we get an order out of Washington, D.C. that you have to, everybody has to get into this multi-level marketing business, Amway. Think about it, you know. They're telling us we have to get involved, and if we don't get involved, we're going to get penalized. The government is just shifting and totally shifting its role and its original intent. You know, one thing that we're fixing to go to a break, but one thing we're going to do with VFN, with our VFN Kingdom Business Partners, is focusing on the government mountain, where groups get together, small groups get together, you know, small is the new big, and have a relationship, but also begin to talk about the Constitution. You know, what does it say? You know, what does it say about this? What does it say about that? And we're looking forward to that.